Glenn and Brian Lunny have never shared the spotlight. Glenn was a mission control flight director during the Apollo era. Decades later, his son Brian followed in his footsteps and helped lead the space shuttle missions. When they meet with us to chat about their journeys, it's the first time they each get a microphone.
Have you did an interview together before?
I don't think so.
Really?
Mm-mm.
That's so
first
strange.
Time.
Yep.
First time.
Imagine I've gotten the question, you know, what's it like that your dad did all he did and that you're in the industry too, but we've not interviewed together.
One generation literally passed the torch down to the next, and it all started with Apollo. 50 years after we landed on the moon, generation after generation fell in love with outer space.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
I'm Tamika Weatherspoon, and this is Moonwalk, a series of multi-generational conversations between astronauts, students from the Mars generation, and leaders in the Apollo era. I'm bringing together people on different paths, connected by love for outer space. Brian Lunny doesn't remember the Apollo missions. His father, Glenn Lunny, was a flight director in Mission Control, but to him, everyone's dad worked at NASA. That's what growing up in the Houston area during the space age was like. As a kid, hearing names like Christopher Kraft, who helped establish Mission Control, or Neil Armstrong, the first man on the moon, just wasn't a big deal.
So growing up in Friendswood in those days for me was, I was like any other young kid, I imagine. We ran around, we did our thing. I remember the space program going on. I remember many of the other parents were involved in the space program, but I can't say it was a focus for me. You would have people over the house and this is Mr. Cernan, this is Mr. Armstrong. Like, yeah, whatever. Can I go play now? I did not appreciate that when I was very young.
That's not surprising.
And it's very sad today to reflect upon that. So Apollo 11 landed, I was 3, so I don't have any recollection of that. However, I do remember years later when you were part of the Apollo-Soyuz test program and you were the program manager and you would invite people from NASA to our house for parties and such. And you loved those oysters from Galveston Bay, which I did not like. but we would have all these, you'd invite the Russians. The Russians were in town, the Soviets, I should say, because it was the Soviet Union at the time, would come to our house and I knew there was a party coming up because mom would make me clean my room and mow the grass and get the house ready for company. Yep. And of course, me and the brothers and Jenny would do that also. But I do remember in particular, there is a Russian, one of the Russians' engineers came to visit, and the Russians always bring gifts when they go to someone's house.
They're very good at it.
They are. They bring flowers to the lady. They bring gifts to the children. And one of them brought a little model tank, a Russian tank, and then he helped me assemble that night. He'd rather do that, I guess, than be at the party. But interestingly enough, many years later, when I was a flight director on the International Space Station program, I got to work with that same engineer.
Same guy.
It was Viktor Belagov. And he was there at our house when I was 6 or 8 or whenever that was.
Yep.
And then I got to work with him during my career.
Right. That's a wonderful story, Brian.
Yep. So why don't you tell me what got you started in the space program?
Well, when I was growing up, I used to make model airplanes. And that got me to thinking about a career in aviation. And I took that while I was in college, aeronautical engineering. And in August of my last year, the Russians launched Sputnik. And all the aviation business turned upside down. And it turned into, some of it turned into the space business. And fortunately, I met George Lowe, who was in NASA at the time. And within a month, he asked me if I wanted to join the Space Task Group. They were working on something called Mercury. So I when I was asked, I didn't have any qualms at all. I said, absolutely, I'm ready to go. And it turned out I was working for George Lowe, and he was very influential in terms of watching the space program, the Mercury program, helping get Gemini started. And then he was advising the president, President Kennedy. George was on the team that was doing one of these, what do we do after we do Mercury? Mm-hmm. And didn't take George long to get to going to the moon. So he was an advocate for that in the process leading up to the president announcing that that's what he wanted to do. It's a good time.
That's fantastic. So I got to ask, what was it like when you first got to Houston?
Well, it was beautiful weather down here, football weather. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was always a bright, sunny day, no snow. It was a beautiful sight, especially in November. I got down here, and then I was by myself, and I had to, Marilyn was coming down in a plane yet to be seen. And she's a northern girl, and mm-hmm. Boy, when she got to the top of the stairs, it was July 4th or thereabouts, Mom just sort of, like the weather just hit her in the face.
Coming off the airplane.
She was, yes, going back, staggering back into the airplace. And she had our new daughter, Jennifer, uh-huh. and she had one to come, and she was about 8 months along on that project. I think she wanted to get back on the airplane. It was so hot. But the people who greeted us downtown at the Coliseum were wonderful. I mean, they really loved the idea of having the space program here, and they still do. I mean, it's been 60-some years, and the city of Houston and the state of Texas has always been very proud of the program, and they're happy with it.
I think that's why we have the Houston Rockets and the Houston Astros.
Yes, well named.
Because of what y'all did. So following on how you got into the space program, I'll share with you what I went through. Of course, we grew up there in Friendswood, and most of my classmates were family of NASA people, dads, moms, whatever, working there at the center. And I have to say that through high school, it wasn't a priority to me to think I need to go work in the space program. It's good at math and science. Aerospace engineering seemed like a good idea because airplanes, you look at a big airplane and all these people and all this stuff on the airplane, how does that thing fly? So that's what motivated me to go to college to study aerospace engineering. And it was after Challenger, when I saw that happen, and then I got that summer job working down in the control center. That was an opportunity that I realized I could not pass up.
You used to say, it fits you like a glove.
Fit me like a glove. I don't know, must have been in the blood, something. But that job taught me, showed me that's what I wanted to go do. So I finished college and went back to that group and worked as a shuttle flight controller, then a station flight controller, and it was fabulous.
Yeah.
Just like you said, it was a good time to go and do all those things. So I am curious, a question I've never asked you. So at JSC, we have the ops side and the engineering side, and you gravitated to the ops side. How did you get into operations versus being on the engineering side?
There were plenty of people in engineering, and there were very few people doing what I was doing. I was working on implementing Chris Kraft's idea of a control center. And the question was, okay, what are we going to have in there, and what kind of equipment, what kind of displays, what kind of decisions are we going to make in that room? So I was doing reentry studies for exactly that purpose. And lo and behold, I had an opportunity to start putting that into practice. So putting in just the entry stuff was an armful of work. And we had to figure out, well, how do we manage that? How do we monitor it? How do we know we're okay? And how do we know we got to stop? All those questions were part of what became the operations analysis for the future. And so it was fun. I just kind of slid along. And
what were some of the big obstacles you had to overcome, or the Houston team had to overcome, to make the lunar landing happen?
Well, let's see. We didn't have very many people. It's a surprise to people now, but we had after the Mercury flight was over, we were doing Gemini and then moving into Apollo. So we had to hire people. And I was hiring people to come into what we called the Flight Dynamics Branch. This was 64. And I was 5 years older than they were, but I was an old guy compared to them. And so I started gathering people up, and they ask me now, how did I choose? You know, mm-hmm. what was my criteria for choosing? And, you know, all the young kids getting out of college, they were more or less even. And I just hired them on the basis of attitude. But it worked, because 5 years after 64, we landed on the moon, and we had been through Gemini, and we'd been through five flights of Apollo to get there. And it was all run by those young men that we hired in 64 and 65. And they just jumped at the job. They did a terrific job of teaching themselves. I remember people would walk in and say, what do you want me to work on? I says, well, see that guy over there? He's trying to figure out how does he want to monitor the trajectory when it's going down to the surface of the moon, and how can he be sure that it's safe, and what does he do if he thinks it's not, and so on. So I was working with these young fellas, and when we landed on the moon, the average age of that crowd was about 27 years old. And that's a shock to people when I tell them that, but it's really true. Now, you know, something else happened there, Bri. I worried about how my being busy and going places and being away from home, how that affected you guys. Mm-hmm. And we actually had a discussion of that one time. I don't know if you remember this, but you guys, three boys and a daughter.
Our crazy sister.
Yes, crazy sister, said to me, oh, no, we were happy you did that. We know you're working on something really important, so we were just proud you were doing it. That's all. We didn't lose anything. We didn't miss any time that is worth talking about. So you guys help me out with that, because otherwise I could be fretting about.
Well, it was because Mom was there taking care of us. And yes. She did a great job raising us, and you were around
some. They're the unsung heroes of Apollo.
Oh, yeah, the moms?
Yes.
Definitely.
Yes,
and
they really are.
They unsung heroes of a lot of things, I expect.
A lot, yes.
And I did get to see, I think it was Apollo Soyuz test vehicle, or Apollo Soyuz vehicle launch from the Cape, KSC as we call it today. And that was a tremendous experience for me. I still remember those rockets going, and that was the little rocket, the 1B, not the 5.
That's right.
I was 8 or so, I can't remember. But I remember those rockets going, impressive that was.
In my time of life, I reflect back on how it was. And in many, many respects, you could not ask for a better set of circumstances. And we had in our management a set of people. You can't call it management. You got to call it leadership. The management team, the George Lowe and Dr. Giruth and Chris, they were just a fantastic team. And funny thing is, I thought it was going to go on forever. I really did. And the shuttle program, you know, gave hope of that, even when we get done flying the Apollos. But somehow it gradually lost something of what it once had. And I know that the people today are looking to recover that.
Yes, we are.
And become one with it and proud of it and so on.
We just need to go do it.
Yep.
And go fly. And that's what we're working to do.
Yes.
In my role and everyone's role, there are a lot of us engineers out there trying to make it happen.
Good.
Because we want to get back to the moon and then to Mars.
Good.
Moonwalk was produced and written by me, Tamika Weatherspoon, with audio support by Shannon Harrison, graphics by Akalina Sanchez, and editing by Todd Holslander. Our executive producer is Don Geraci. Find videos, behind-the-scenes images, and more from this series at houstonpublicmedia.org/moon.